Hi everyone, welcome to the Mindful Chef, Chef Leisha Barnett here to talk to you today about food and trauma. There have been some conversations I've had lately with a few people regarding how trauma affects their food choices, their health, and so much more. And I wanted to bring the subject here because I feel like there's some things that need to be expanded upon. And food shaming is literally the thing that came to mind first. And it was the first thing that made me want to dig deeper into this subject. I have seen a lot of conversations and been and had a lot of conversations with people who are shaming other people for their choices and their food choices in particular. And I wanted to discuss it because I believe that there is this little piece that folks don't take into consideration when it comes to food choice. Simply being able to choose food is a privilege. So that's literally the first thing. The first thing is that if you as an individual are able to choose for yourself what type of food you're going to eat and how you're going to cook it, you are in a privileged population. And I know the word privilege is difficult for some people to hear, to accept, to wrap their minds around, and to kind of be able to grasp and understand that despite having systemic oppression prevalent in their lives and other things that can technically keep you down from living your best life, that you too can also have some sort of privilege that you carry with you. And that's a subject matter that a lot of people, they tend to struggle with, you know, the fact that, you know, I, as a Black woman, am a protected class. So that still means that I have some privileges that other people don't have because I live well. I can choose which store to shop in. I can choose what to put in my mouth every single day. I have certain choices. There are people who don't have that choice, and it doesn't look like what you think it does. What do I mean by that? People who shop at food banks don't have that choice. They're literally at the mercy of what is provided to them. So if you are able to find your sustenance in a store, any store, even if it's the store that you love to hate, you have a certain set of privilege to you at your disposal that others do not have. So how does this relate to trauma and everything as far as food is concerned? There is often this narrative that's pushed online about making certain decisions and choices for yourself and your children and your family that I think misses a link. We have to consider culture as a whole. We have to consider environment as a whole. We have to consider things that most don't consider when we are discussing food. You know, people think it's as simple as, you know, making better choices for your health when we know that food disparities, food insecurity and health disparities exist for a reason. And systemic oppression is like the cornerstone of that reason. But economics and history, all of those things play a role as well. And not just for people of color, but also for others. So when you think about the Great Depression, that is, you know, an era where people hoarded food because they didn't know where their next meal was coming from. The pandemic should show you right now that that's a real thing. When this whole thing started and we couldn't find toilet paper, consider what it must have been like during the Great Depression. You know, so anybody born during those times, they have adopted this coping mechanism of overpurchasing even when they don't need something, because they had to live through that time when they didn't know where their next meal was coming from. And it's so much as, you know, it's feast or famine. So anybody who has lived through something like that in that traumatic time frame has built up a particular set of rules that they live by as it relates to food. But that also means that they buy a lot of non-perishable foods because they know it will last longer than the fresh stuff. So as we are wrapping our minds around the whole concept and construct of non-processed foods and eating whole and fresh and local, that wasn't a choice that people had at certain particular times of history. And it's the reason why the choices were what they were. It's not always about people not being able to afford better, people not being able to do better, or anything else like that. It is literally because that was the nature of the time frame. And you think about, these are the people of the Great Depression era who raised my parents, right? My parents may not have had to hoard food the same way, but as parents who raised children in the 70s, there were other factors that affected their food choices, other things. I'm from Oakland. You guys hear me talk about this all the time, but that was, you know, I was born in 77. So living in Oakland as a young child, my existence, my parents' existence was shaped by what? The Black Panthers, the crack epidemic, you know, all of these other factors, unemployment, and the choices that they made for their family was based upon those factors. So when we're talking about my generation and those younger and so on and so forth, being able to choose better, being able to make decisions surrounding food that their parents didn't make, we have to understand that there is a particular set of trauma there, and unless we start to work through and heal those parts of our family lineage, we're going to raise children who have trauma-based responses to food as well. And it's all about being able to heal those pieces of the puzzle so that we can move forward. And it doesn't always look the way you think it looks, because a lot of times we like to sensationalize the word trauma. We like to sensationalize so many things, you know, as we are coming to a place in this new, you know, in this era where, you know, mental health is being taken seriously. And there are more people I know who are in therapy than ever before. There are more people who are doing mindful things than ever before that I am aware of. We have to also understand that, you know, the things that our parents did and our grandparents did and our great-great-grandparents did, we carry with us in many ways. And some of them are good and some of them are not so good. But as long as we understand the mindset and the reasoning behind it, we can move forward in grace and in this space that is much more forgiving than what I have been seeing. So what do I mean by that? Like the food shaming, people literally shaming other folks for making the food decisions that they do, the choices that they do. And then also not understanding that there is a segment of our population that doesn't have the ability to choose. When we recognize that some decisions that people are making came from trauma, they came from an ancestral lineage of choices that were made, decisions that were made based on the environment that they were given. If we keep that in the forefront of our hearts and minds, perhaps we can begin to understand people and have conversations about food in a way that is much more positive, much more affirming, much more life-giving than we have ever seen before. Because right now, there's not a lot of positivity. There's a lot of judgment. There's a lot of finger pointing. And there is a lot of this level of wokeness that people think they have an authority to come at another person about a decision that they have made in their homes with their family members. Meanwhile, these very so-called woke and conscious folks are still force-feeding their children, making them sit at the dinner table until they finish their whole plate, and policing dessert and all these other things, not knowing that these are behaviors that come from generational food-based trauma. The fact that we had to sit at the table until our plates were cleaned, we didn't have the ability to dictate how much food we wanted to eat. We were given an allotment of food, and we are told that this is what you must eat. It's good for you. It's going to sustain you. And even if you're not hungry, you have to finish it. Even if you don't like this thing, you have to finish it. It comes from a place of scarcity. It comes from a place of not knowing where your next meal is coming from. So you have to force feed your children. And in many cases, the parents who did that, they didn't eat. There wasn't enough for the parents to eat. So in some way, shape, or form, it was like, I've given my all to my children because they are the next generation. They are going to carry the torch. I can go without a meal, but I have to raise these babies up and I have to take care of them. So I'm going to make sure that they have what they need. And it was so difficult to get a hold of a well-rounded meal with all the elements that are needed to nutritionally support you, that it was a slap in the face if you didn't eat your food, if you didn't finish it. It wasn't necessarily about control in the same sense that I'm seeing younger parents doing it in that way. It was more so about scarcity and the understanding that I don't know where the next meal is coming from, so my kids gotta eat. When we start to understand why our parents made the decisions that they made, number one, we can forgive them for doing a thing that you may have felt was harmful. Number two, you see them as human and understand that they did those things with our best interest in mind, even if it was something that was uncomfortable for us. It's a subject that I feel like is difficult for people to understand because it does require shadow work. It requires the behind the scenes. It requires the healing. It requires you to come and face yourself as a human and look at other people as humans as well. Sometimes we put our parents and our grandparents and our aunts and uncles on pedestals, and we put them in this place where they're superhuman, and we think that adults can't make the wrong choice. And then we become adults and we realize that there's some messed up stuff that we have to work through. And rather than blame the previous generations, we must understand what they were dealing with at the time, particularly if they were Black. Understanding what historic things were happening in their era, how that shaped their lives, the impact that it had on every decision that they made for their families was so huge. It was just over the top. And here we are sitting in our little comfy corner of the world, you know, where protesting online is much safer than having dogs and water hoses brought out on you, you know, in the era of my parents. Like, it's easy to be that keyboard warrior. It's easy to point fingers. It's easy to say, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I want us to start becoming more aware that unless an individual is completely messed up, and there are some messed up individuals out there, in the case of my parents, they did their best. They did their absolute best. And they put everything they had into raising me and my brother and my sisters to the best of their ability. And parenting is a thing that you got to go with it. And it's not always going to be easy, and you won't always know what to do. But if you wake up every single day and you put your best foot forward every single day into the world, in the hope that you are providing a safe, nurturing, loving, supportive environment for your children, that you hope the best is going to turn out. So if you're walking around here with trauma around food, you're afraid to cook, you are having anxiety about what diet to choose and how to feed yourself, please understand that this is not your fault, but it also isn't your parents' fault. It also isn't your grandparents' fault. There is no finger to point at a person. You know, if you want to point the finger at anybody or anything, you can just point it at the government. You can point it at the world. You can point it at the universe and say that such is life. But it's time for us to heal ourselves, heal our relationship with food, so that we can raise children who don't have this type of trauma, that the children don't have the type of weight to carry. And while we will do our best to heal ourselves so that our kids don't, please understand that there's still going to be some things that they deal with because of what has happened currently in your lives and theirs too. So it might be time to have a conversation and just say, listen, we're doing our best. The world is weird. It can be tough sometimes, but we're just here trudging along, one foot in front of the other, trying to do our best to be decent human beings, you know, and that should count for something. And I want these conversations to become a little bit more, have a little more meat to them, a little more depth. You know, online, you see the parents fighting each other over what's alkaline and what's processed and unprocessed and all of these other things. When at the end of the day, the fact that you can choose, you carry privilege. So be mindful, because while you're out here pointing the finger at all these other people that you consider privileged, you don't understand what it takes to be someone who doesn't carry the anxiety of not knowing what to do in a kitchen. Maybe they weren't allowed to be in their kitchen growing up because of scarcity. And there was that one time you messed up a meal and everybody was hungry and it was a problem. You don't know that somebody wasn't force fed something that they didn't like, that they were body shamed, that they were policed, you know. So there's a lot to it, you know. Having to sit at a table and being forced to eat the one thing that you really don't like to eat is abusive. But you know what? When it happened to me, it wasn't with the intent to harm. It was with the intent to nourish. And I love my parents enough to recognize that it was always with the intent to nourish and care. So it will never be the source of such negative heaviness in my life that I carry on to my children. What did I do differently? Well, if there was something that they preferred not to eat, I just don't give it to them. Honestly, like when they were little, I would try to cook a particular thing in several different ways in the hopes that they would come to enjoy it, that they would embrace it, that maybe I could find that one way to prepare it that made their heart sing. But if not, I realized that that is not for them, because there are 15 other things that are equally healthy for them that they do eat. That's how we reclaim our relationship with food and our relationship with our families. You know, giving the children their autonomy, the ability to say, I don't like this, can we have this instead, is a powerful thing. Because if the thing is, I prefer not to have green beans, can you give me broccoli? Then absolutely, you never have to eat a green bean again. Why? When there's broccoli that you will eat, where there's Brussels sprouts, you'll eat those, you'll eat cauliflower, you'll eat carrots. So you don't want the green bean. I'm not gonna do it. And I'm not gonna stress myself out or you enforcing a green bean. That's what healing around food looks like. That's what bringing the circle in looks like. It's when we are able to say that this person, my child, is a small person with the ability to decide for themselves within reason. My sister and I used to have these conversations all the time when my daughter was very young. And I remember she was probably 3 or 4 when I gave her 2 choices of what she wanted for lunch. You know, and I said, you can have peanut butter and jelly, or you can have a turkey and cheese. And my sister said, why do you let her decide? Why don't you just make her food? And I said, honestly, because both choices are acceptable for lunch. You know, she can eat them and she has her own mind. Maybe she don't want peanut butter and jelly today. You know, giving a young person the ability to decide for themselves within reason, when you set them up, it empowers them and it helps them to become assertive and make choices later on that fit them, that make sense to them. You ever see a woman in her 40s who is indecisive and can't figure out life for herself? And has never been able to make decisions because decisions were made for her. Someone who is not assertive in the workplace because she's afraid to speak up for what it is that she wants. Part of that starts in childhood when you're not able to make a choice for yourself. And again, those are trauma-based responses. How we raise our kids without the ability to choose is a sense of control. It's a power and control thing. But if you know why and where it comes from, you can acknowledge that while it was hurtful and unnecessary, you turned out okay and your parents did the best that they could. So now it's time for you to work through those things so that you can become this other person on the other end. So it doesn't stop with the more heavy stuff, you know. I mean, food is heavy, but people don't think of it like that. But it doesn't stop there. Food is included in that. And again, you know, my kids, they're 16 and 12 now. And I just fill the house with things I know they will eat. There is the balance of what is healthful and then the treats. And they are present in my home and they are allowed to make decisions for themselves, particularly with breakfast and lunch, and often with dinner if I ask them what do they want and we'll decide together. But particularly with breakfast, lunch, and snacks, that they have the ability to just go and get and make the choice for themselves. And it's been that way for a very long time. And it's one small way that they have the ability to learn how to make decisions for themselves, feel empowered, and become grounded in their wellness. Because they'll tell me, particularly my 16-year-old, she will say, I didn't have enough vegetables this week. I'm feeling a little off. Can you make a pot of greens? I mean, she knows the greens is coming anyway. But sometimes when we get into that rush in the rat race and we're not as mindful about the food and everything, yeah, it happens. And so if she is you know, feeling a little bloated or whatnot, she'll say, yeah, I haven't had the water and the vegetables like I need to, so I need to step up my game. This is not something that I specifically told her to look for. This is something that is a culmination over time of me saying to both of the children, pay attention to your body. Pay attention to yourself. You know, pay attention to the, you know, the TMI stuff, like the number of times you do number two, what it looks like, how it feels, so that you know when you're off and you can rectify it. You can make decisions that'll balance you back out. And at 16 and 12, they do just that. They really do. So being intentional, being mindful, being aware that food trauma is connected to other traumas, is connected to your overall wellness, and understand that food choice is a privilege. So before you start to point fingers at folks about what they're doing and what they're not doing, what they're eating and what they ain't eating, and how they're cooking it and all of that, understand that you have a privilege that they may not. And I'll dig a little deeper. There's a part two to this, and I want to discuss that some more, but I don't want the podcast to be too long. But I just had this particular subject on my heart because I feel it's really important. It's important that we understand and that we heal. When we heal ourselves and we give space and we hold space for our parents, our grandparents, our aunts and uncles and cousins, and everybody else along that family tree, and understand the hand that they were given, and understand the decisions that they made, why they made them, you can move in grace and light and love and acceptance, and you can feel so much stronger. You know, your life can become more fulfilled. And you really understand what forgiveness is, what love is, what kindness is, and how that fits into the grand scheme of things. And how food is connected to it. How your health is connected to it. Because being healthy isn't just about what's on your plate. It's also about what your mindset is. It's also about where your heart is, your spiritual life, all of those things. And thanking God for every single moment of every single day. Because people are dying every single day. Every day. And why live?